Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Blog Talk Radio Nation. This is Pat Whiters from the Today's Pigskin Podcast, brought to you by FanRag Sports Radio. Let's get started with our first guest. Hello, Jamie Eisner. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Pat?
I am also doing well, running around a little bit. I had a little problem with the Skype Skype intro here, so I'm going on the host call-in number, but I did see you waiting there patiently. Let's talk about the NFL veteran scouting combine. First of all, Michael Sam, of course, was the big name, or the biggest name, I guess, not necessarily the best or biggest player, but the biggest name in the combine activities. What are your thoughts on the NFL veteran scouting combine?
Well, it's a very intriguing idea, and it's something when it was first announced that it really piqued my interest that, you know, we have these combines and these runarounds for all the rookies coming in, but we have nothing for veteran players or sophomore players who maybe didn't get a crack on their first team their first year. You know, it's very interesting because teams are always looking for depth. They got to fill out their rosters, especially heading into training camp. I think it's a good idea, and it's something that can be really useful to a handful of vets going forward.
And it's one of these things as well. There are 105 players. We'd like to welcome Stephen Sheehan to the program. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Pat.
Stephen, as we're talking about the NFL scouting combine for veterans, now, were you a little surprised that there were this many players? Was that kind of what you thought would come out of that? And then how many players do you think will really be signed to NFL teams?
I wasn't really surprised because reading some of the stuff from guys like Andrew Brandt, where we're talking about guys like Chris Borland retiring early, Patrick Willis, he says still, as a former agent and a guy that's been in the front office, these teams hear from other agents and players that are desperately trying to get into the league every day, you know, players trying to send in their highlights and their film and all that kind of stuff. So to me, it's not a surprise at all that you have such a large group of athletes that want to get back into the league. You know, many of them, you know, this is their only livelihood. They might not have finished college, so this is their only shot they really have to make some good money. Ultimately, you know, based on some of the times that we've seen reported, especially from running backs like Mikel LeShore and Felix Jones running in like the 4.8, 4.9 range, it's really hard to see that many of these guys getting a chance. I would say only a couple at best. And guys like Michael Sam, you know, as much as the off-field stuff is people want to bring up, the fact that he ran over a 5, I believe it was a 5.140,
yeah.
I mean, that speaks for itself right there. There's a reason he's not in the league, and it has nothing to do with his orientation. It has to do with physically teams don't think that he can play at this level.
And I think he's kind of seen that as well throughout the time where he was drafted in the 7th round by the St. Louis Rams, and a lot of people said as well at the time, you know, maybe it would have been a better case scenario, especially going to someone like the Rams, who one of their strengths was their defensive line and their pass rush. And if he's this kind of specialty player, and that's not obviously great speed, they're not going to put him in special teams situations usually because he's never really played that. And you do want some speed and some covering and some blocking ability, whether it's along those lines. So there was a thought as well that maybe coming out of college, Michael Sam would have been better suited to be an undrafted free agent. Then he can kind of pick and choose a situation that's right for him. Jamie, do you see a situation that is right potentially or the best case scenario for Michael Sam?
You know, it's tough to figure out because, you know, as Stephen alluded to, there's a reason why he hasn't been picked up throughout last year. And he's a tweener. He's not quite agile or physical enough to play defensive end. He's a little bit too small and not good enough in pass coverage to play outside linebacker. He's kind of a man without a position right now. And, you know, it showed in St. Louis, it showed in Dallas. I don't know if there's a perfect fit for him because I don't know if the position right out there that really showcases what he brings to the table.
And, you know, there's been talk as well, of course, that he maybe the best case scenario, the best landing spot for him would be the CFL. Steven, would you rather be a CFL player, a potential starter, or would you rather have that opportunity, you know, and kind of generally speaking, the thought of maybe making an NFL practice squad? What would be your preference, and can you think you could speak as well a little bit on behalf of some of these players? Because the NFL is the dream, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing is, for some of these guys, maybe they see the NFL as the ultimate goal, and they want to give it everything they can to fit into that short window to make it into the biggest league, in the biggest sport in the world. Maybe they see the CFL as more of a fallback option. You know, oh, if I don't get signed to an NFL team, I know that I'm probably more talented than some of the guys that are in the CFL right now, or even the Arena League, stuff like that. In my personal opinion, I think it would be really hard to give up on the NFL dream if you were that close. If you're some of these guys that have been drafted before, some of them even as high as, you know, the second or first round, you know, I'd still probably want to give it a shot because you want to keep your name fresh. Ultimately, I still think that there's a chance, you know, if you're young enough, a guy like Mikel Ashore, who, you know, still fairly young by NFL standards and didn't have a lot of tread on the tires, you know, maybe you, if you're not going to cut it in the NFL from the combine standpoint, you go play a year or two in the CFL, you put up some good stats, you have some good recent tape, then an NFL team might come calling for you. So it's kind of, I think it depends a lot about your situation as far as your age, your previous draft status. You know, if you're a late rounder or you were undrafted originally and you just didn't do well at the combine, you know, most likely you're not going to really get that chance in the NFL again. Your best chance might be to go to the CFL. On the other hand, if you're a former high round pick, you're still young, you still have had potential in the league, and scouts and GMs and personnel people know you, I'd still probably fight for that dream because, you know, once you're past the age of 28, 29, and in your 30s, it's pretty much a done deal that you're not going to be in the NFL.
You're not going to be in the NFL anymore. Now, let's talk about – let's shift the conversation. We're going to see. It'll be interesting to take a look and find out how many of these veteran combine guys were given an opportunity. I gotta agree with both of you, though. I think that a lot of times when you're looking at this, NFL teams would rather take a chance on a younger college kid coming into the draft that then they can bring in and find out, kick the tires around as well on them, instead of someone that we know has holes in their game and potentially other issues. I want to get your guys' thoughts, because our last Pigskin podcast was, of course, Monday night. And then shortly after that, Chris Borland, fabulous linebacker from the San Francisco 49ers, retired. Jamie, there's a lot of buzz going around. I know there's been a lot of coverage, of course, on Chris Borland, both sides of that, as well as the 49ers. What's the kind of the buzz on today's Pigskin, and what are your personal thoughts on his retirement? He's only 24 years old. He played one season in the NFL.
Well, I always support anybody who wants to, you know, makes that decision, whether it's to pursue an NFL, you know, give up another opportunity to pursue an NFL career, i.e., you know, a junior leaving college, or someone who has an NFL career decides, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. And, you know, from reading into some of his comments, there's something to be said that he truly didn't feel he could put 100% effort into playing NFL. If he truly felt he would play the game differently, he would shy away from certain things because of fear of head injuries and other injuries could result from playing football, then you have to respect his decision to not take money, to not just continue to go out there and give half an effort, to not go out there and just be another player on the field. And you got to commend him for making that decision at such a young age and, you know, willingly giving back 3/4 of the signing bonus. Do I think this is going to be some sort of long-term trend? As Stephen alluded to earlier, they're just, and as the Veterans Combine weekend showed, there's a lot more players who want to be in the NFL, players who are afraid of the NFL. And as long as that is the case, the NFL doesn't have to worry.
The NFL doesn't necessarily have to worry about that, but it's going to be bringing a more awareness to not only the safety issues that surround the entire National Football League, but as well, you know, the thoughts that here's a guy, good head on his shoulders, very talented. I mean, he finished fourth place in NFL Rookie of the Year votes. That just passes this opportunity up. Steven, do you think we're going to see more of these kind of actions from players retiring early based on injuries, or even the threat of injury, or was this kind of a singular case?
I think it's hard to really make a generalization about it, because ultimately I think there's always going to be guys that are still wanting to play and they're going to push through a lot of things. I think there are a lot of injuries that go unreported, especially with concussions. But I think that today's generation of players, especially with more parents being involved from an earlier age, when they see all this data and research coming out and all these storylines and reports on ESPN and other news outlets like today's Pigskin about the issues of concussions, the long-term effects of it. Now we kind of see these previous generations and what's happened to some of these guys that have gone through all the CTE and stuff like that. I definitely think it raises an awareness level and probably a fear level among some players about whether the risk is worth the reward, because ultimately, you know, yes, you can play football for 5 or 10 years, but if the rest of your life, you know, you can't function correctly. A guy like Kevin Cobb, you know, we've read about his story that he still has headaches and you know, can't be in the light and all this kind of stuff. I mean, you got to figure, you know, you have a much longer life after football than during it. And, you know, playing rugby myself, being exposed to, you know, some head injuries and that being part of the game as well, you know, we all kind of have to make that decision whether to call it a career after you've reached a certain point where your long-term health and your long-term happiness and vitality is on the line. And I think ultimately, I think this newer generation is going to start making those types of decisions like Chris Borland, maybe not so hastily like he did after 1 year, but, you know, I can't fault a guy for wanting to live out the rest of his life, you know, to his full potential rather than risk the next couple of years banging his head around, getting concussions and suffering long-term damage.
There'll be a continuing conversation that we have on today's Pigskin. And of course, all across the FanRag Sports Networks as well, with today's You, talking about the college game as well. You know, a lot of these concussions, you know, looking at someone like Borland, were reported, you know, his two reported concussions were in high school. And, you know, and I think that's going to be part of the process as well when you take a look into this and making the NFL safer. You know, when you look at Junior Seau and all of these concussions as well that he had throughout college at USC and then even in high school, that's where a lot of these do take place, and when the brain is in a more developmental stage than it is when you're 23, 24, and however old, you know, these guys are still able to be able to play. It is a cutthroat business being in the NFL, and as you alluded to earlier, Steven, this is something that millions of players and potential prospects want that opportunity, and they would run into a brick wall in a sense to get that opportunity to play on an NFL team. You're listening to the Today's Pigskin podcast. We are live with Jamie Eisner. You can follow him on Twitter at JME Eisner. That's EISNER, as well as Stephen Sheehan. Give him a follow as well on Twitter at Stephen P. Sheehan. I'm your host for today's Pigskin, Pat_Whitehurst. You can follow me on Twitter as well. Gentlemen, I want to get, you know, and we're kind of in this point of the season in the NFL offseason where we're still waiting for the draft. A lot of the pro days, of course, are happening. We've got some college news and notes and inter-squad games and that sort of thing. There are spring games. But it's a lot of news, it's a lot of notes, it's a lot of rumors and whatever else. Well, one rumor that is not a rumor, that was actually Darren Sharper today, sentenced to 9 years in prison in Arizona now regarding his rape cases. Jamie, What's your thought on this, on the whole Darren Sharper thing? He could have been facing 33 years, and he still may get more, get up to 20 with his no contest plea deal. Do you think that was enough for Arizona to give him 9 years?
I mean, it's tough when you're talking about some of these things, but we're not in the courtroom. We don't know exactly everything that they know and the process that goes in on it. you know, as someone that has not been personally affected, have any family members affected by the crime that Derek Sharper has been no contest to, I don't feel I have the proper acumen to speak to a long of a punishment sufficient for the family. But what I am happy of is that there's going to be jail time. And I think a lot of times with professional athletes or movie stars, whether it be financially or through fame, they have ways to kind of get around certain punishments. You know, Ray Rice could be an example of that. While he got a deal that 99.9% of people in New Jersey don't get. But in this case, you know, this is a much more serious crime. And to me, I'm just happy he's going to be, looks like he's going away for a long, long time.
Very well said, Jamie. And it is a very sensitive subject, of course. Let's talk about it in football sense then. Steven, Darren Sharper, you know, resume on the field with the interceptions and the longevity of his career, there would have been some potential for him to come up on the Hall of Fame ballot. Is that all but dead now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that his chances flew out the window today with all the plea deals coming out. And if you remember a few weeks ago, you know, Peter King was kind of standing on his soapbox about saying, you know, we can't write him off yet because he hasn't been, you know, had his day in court, and we're not supposed to factor in, we being the writers that vote on the Hall of Fame induction, we're not supposed to take in off-field behavior into our consideration for the voting process. But I think that it's just, there's just no way that this could happen, especially in light of all the recent domestic violence issues the NFL has faced, and from Adrian Peterson to Ray Rice to Greg Hardy. There's just no way they could elect a guy with this type of crime on his record, and he's obviously pled guilty to it. That to me is just no way that the Hall of Fame, you can enshrine someone that's done something like this off the field, no matter how great he was on the field. And like you said, I think if this situation did not happen and this was not part of his record or his person, there's probably a very good chance that he would have eventually been elected. He certainly had a very good chance to be in that conversation based on his statistics, the longevity of his career, the Pro Bowls and all that. But, you know, even though they're not supposed to take into account the off-field issues, there's just no way the NFL could stand behind something like that after everything that's come up in the past year or two.
Yeah, exactly, and I agree as well with that. Jamie, do you have other final thoughts on Darren Sharper and the potential Hall of Fame? Should we take into account, you know, the NFL personal conduct policy? They're the first major sports organization to come up with this sort of policy, and should they be held responsible and liable for their off-field actions when it comes to even voiding contracts?
Yeah, and it, to me, it's as simple as, even though the Hall of Fame is in theory supposed to be just strictly on the field base, strictly what you to further your career statistically, the fact of the matter is it's an honor and a privilege to be elected into any of the pro sports Hall of Fames. It's not a right. And it's you're not a player is not owed anything. You know, it to me is if you certain crime. I mean, to me it's as simple as this: is if you're a very charitable person, maybe you donate to charity all the time. You're on the charity's wall of fame because you donate so much money. And then one day you turn around and you're caught in a serious felony crime and you go to jail. Does that mean that organizations still continue to honor you? Maybe not, because you, as the player person, destroyed your own reputation. So in my mind, anyone that has committed a serious, serious crime really should not be up for consideration. As good a player as you are, it's still a privilege and it's still an honor to be on that. It's still as much of a lifetime achievement award as it is a playing career. And I don't think Darren Sharper, in particular, is owed anything when it comes to Hall of Fame voting.
I agree 100% with that, and as looking at the case as well, you look at, you know, someone like O.J. Simpson, of course, who was elected into the Hall of Fame well before all of the charges and all of the other alleged crimes and then convicted crimes were as well. You know, you take a look at someone like him, the history book can still record him in that as a great running back, but if he wasn't in the Hall of Fame before that, he definitely would not have been in there afterward. And that might be a more of a editorial on our society as we're changing as well today. A couple names that you guys have both brought up, I'd like to talk about that right now. One, Greg Hardy signed with the Dallas Cowboys. And two, Ray Rice is still looking for a job. Steven, what are your thoughts on the Greg Hardy signing from not only an on-the-field case, but as well as some of the off-the-field problems and issues that he's facing? Good move by Dallas.
I mean, it's an excellent move by Dallas if you're talking about an on-field perspective. You know, 2 years ago, Greg Hardy was considered arguably a top two or three defensive end in the NFL, and he obviously has the versatility to move inside too, which has made him such a fantastic player when he's been on the field. Now, obviously, last year he missed the season with all these off-field issues with domestic violence and such. You know, I can't really be there to judge. You know, we don't know all the details of that situation. But for the Cowboys, this is a great move. They needed to replace DeMarcus Ware. They couldn't really do that last year, but they signed Greg Hardy to a one-year deal, so he kind of has a chance to prove himself. Obviously, the big number to everyone is $11.3 million, but, you know, not over $9 million of that is tied up in roster bonuses. So, you know, he has to be active for that. And obviously the big issue moving forward is whether the commissioner, you know, hands out a suspension for him, which it seems like some people think that is going to happen. And ultimately, you know, he might not make that full value, but if he is on the field, I mean, that's a guy that's very dangerous. That could keep the Cowboys right there in the thick of things in the NFC East. He's a guy that I think if he's playing well, plays up to his potential. He's only 26 years old, going to be turning 27 this summer. This is a guy that could be making serious, serious bank next summer if he is able to stay clean off the field and produce like he did in 2013, because he was just an absolute dominant force that led the Panthers to the playoffs. And he's a guy that's just got freakish ability. But, you know, again, the off-field issues are something that's always going to be kind of attached to his name moving forward. Will a team pay for him and give him a long-term deal? We don't know. So this is going to be a nice move for both sides. You know, he can prove himself, rehab his value, rehab his image a little bit, and the Cowboys can benefit from that and get a great defensive player that was once seen as a defensive player of the year candidate.
Yeah, it will. I think we are entering a new age of the NFL where so much more off the field, and, you know, it's like that in society in general. You can be fired for your Twitter comments and Facebook posts and whatever else is on Instagram. And these are things are being looked at by your potential employers, as well as your off the field behavior and other, you know, other charges. And of course, charges against Greg Hardy were dropped. The accuser, his ex-girlfriend, did not show up for the, and the court knew that she was not going to be there. And, but we're a country of second chances, and we're still a culture of giving people the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, it is innocent until proven guilty. Do you think, Jamie, that Commissioner Goodell will suspend Greg Hardy for maybe a few games, or will it be looking like kind of a time served as last season? And here's your chance, and if you screw it up, then you're done.
It's an interesting question, because part of me wants to say no, considering the way, whether or not, however anybody feels about the way the Chargers ended up getting dropped, but they were. He was on the commissioner's exempt list last year. So my initial reaction is, well, he will not. There's a part of me that wouldn't be surprised. I think we really, really saw a major crack in Roger Goodell's armor for the first time last season with this Ray Rice situation, and the fact that it was handled poorly, that he made a knee-jerk reaction to try to fix it, and then got that suspension got overturned because he didn't have the rights to do that. I think we finally started to see a crack there, that if there's any way possible the league thinks they can get away with it, I think they'll try to at least ding Hardy for a couple games.
Let's talk about some NFL... More NFL talk, in the sense that Los Angeles, Here's the second largest city in well, maybe it's the first largest now, I guess, of course, in North America, in the United States. Los Angeles does not have a football team. Steven, your Patriots, the owner, Robert Kraft, says they should have two teams and they should move there simultaneously. Is this going to be – are we looking at the Rams and either the Chargers or Raiders? What are your thoughts on that? Is L.A. going to have not only one but two teams very shortly?
Yeah, with all the talk, and especially with a guy like Robert Kraft who holds a lot of pull in the NFL, and he's a guy that you know has great credibility, if he's saying that he thinks two teams are going to go, I have to think that at least one is going to be there. It's actually a topic we talk a lot about in my sports finance classes, the viability of a team moving – from either St. Louis, San Diego, Oakland, like you said, to L.A. There's obviously a lot of issues that are involved with something like that, especially from a financial perspective in terms of, you know, taxpayer money, paying for a new stadium, and all that kind of stuff. I think that there's just too much smoke and there has to be some fire there, whether it's, you know, St. Louis moving there or whether it's Oakland and San Diego relocating in some aspect in terms of a stadium and all that. I think it's something is going to happen with LA. It's a great market. And, you know, it's obviously proven to have been successful there before, even though it's been some time. And, you know, just with some of these teams, the way that they're not making money and bringing in the fans, you know, something's got to change, especially for owners that are looking at their bottom line. So I think at least one team's going to go there. Two would be kind of crazy, but I think, you know, at this point, it's not out of the realm of possibility when we're also discussing, you know, a team being in London and all that kind of stuff, too. So I think there is going to be some headway in the next year or so. We probably will see a team, I think, in 2016 season that's playing in MLA.
The leading candidate right now, of course, would be Stan Kroenke's St. Louis Rams, as a that he not only owns the land and there's actually been construction started on that. But Jimmy, there's some interesting questions as well regarding the San Diego Chargers, and Philip Rivers was saying, you know, I don't think I want to move my family to LA, and I'm thankfully not going to be under contract. If there's one team, and that one team would be the St. Louis Rams moving to LA to reunite the Rams with LA, would you see that second team potentially? What's a better fit, San Diego or Oakland?
To me, to me, the clear favorite is St. Louis, and that's been a team that I've thought would be the first one to get to LA for some time now. But two, I think Oakland would actually be number two. I think San Diego can be coaxed. I don't want to quite say manipulated, but coaxed into maybe working out a new stadium deal. They've shown some willingness in the last few weeks here to kind of expedite the process of maybe getting that underway. And I still think of the three teams that have been rumored, keeping the Chargers in San Diego might be the most likely. But you know what? I just can't see the situation in Oakland getting much better. I really can't. It does not look like they're going to get a new stadium. The stadium they're playing in is a flat-out dump. The A's hate it. The Raiders hate it. Visiting teams that come in hate it. Really, it's not about the facility being old. It's about the facility being completely unuseful. And it's to me, that's a situation that the team that's already been to LA, the team that has some culture in that town, I would not be shocked to see maybe a Rams or Raiders or both be as a co-tenant at the arena down there in L.A.
That arena is set up to be in the new Coliseum. They could talk about, you know, you could potentially play in the old Coliseum for the foreseeable future until the new stadium is built in there in Inglewood. And we never know. It's going to be a very, very interesting topic, something that you can continue to follow on FanRag Sports as well as today's Pigskin. I'd like to thank our guests tonight for joining us, Stephen Sheehan and Jamie Eisner. Make sure to give them a follow on Twitter at JME Eisner, EISNER, and at Stephen P. Sheehan. I've been your host for today's Pigskin podcast. My name is Pat Whiters. Give me a follow as well on Twitter at Pat_Whiters. Gentlemen, we look forward to talking more NFL with you. We're going to be getting our draft coverage ramped up, of course, as well. There's mock drafts. There's best and worst case drafts, worst free agent signings of all time. Everything you want on an NFL side of things you can find on today's Pigskin. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. We'll talk with you very soon.
Thanks for having me on, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.
You're welcome anytime, of course. And that's going to do it for today's episode of today's Pigskin Podcast. I've been your host, Pat Whiters. Make sure to give today's Pigskin a follow on Twitter at today's Pigskin and as well at FanRig Sports. In the meantime, be seen, be heard, be a fan. We'll catch you next time on the Today's Pigskin Podcast.